Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings and welcome to Mount Olympus. I am Hercules Invictus. The age of heroes has dawned and the path of public service continues to unfold tonight on the Diana Mompra Show. Diana's guest will be Kathy Platine, a trans activist. Greetings and welcome. How are you, Diana?
Well, hi there. How are you?
I'm doing great and I'm looking forward to your show tonight.
Well, thanks. Let me tell people just a little bit about it. It's the Diana Mompra Show. I've been doing it on cable television for almost 34 years. This is the podcast version. It airs every third Saturday of the month. We usually deal with matters transgender. Because I am transgender, I am the first transgender television journalist ever. And my guest is an amazing woman, a transgender activist and a well-known feminist, Ms. Kathy Platine, who is just really a font of information regarding the trans community, the activism of the trans community, the resistance of the trans community to the current fascistic rules trying to destroy us. She also owns her own radio station, in the Catskills, where she lives, and that is, you know, it's local. So she is an amazing person. Well, hi there, Kathy. How are you? Hello, Kathy.
Pardon?
Hi. How are you?
I am doing fine. Up
That's
here in the
great.
Catskills, 10 miles north of Woodstock. So,
far out, as we used to say. All right.
Yeah, far free.
Groovy.
Keep on trucking.
Let's drop some acid and go to the peace demonstration. All right.
Oh, well,
but anyway.
I've got mushrooms here. I have my friend Barry Wanna. give him a free plug. I'm here to talk, I guess, with trans activism, which we need now, and unfortunately I'm getting a little bit too old and long in the, well, I don't even
know. Nobody gets too old. You're not too old at all. You're seasoned.
I am seasoned. I am that, you know.
Full of pepper. All right.
Yeah,
but, okay,
anyway.
By the way, aren't you a descendant of one of the founding families of the U.S. of A.?
I am indeed. I am a direct descendant on my father's side from John Adams and Abigail Adams.
There you go. And Abigail Adams was a wonderful feminist in her day.
She was an incredible feminist. And on my mother's side, I am descended from Susanna Martin, the witch of Amesbury that was hung at Salem. On the 300th anniversary of the Salem Witch Trials, Newsweek magazine wrote a special article about her and called her America's first feminist.
And that's why they hanged her. God help her.
Yeah. Basically, yes. She raised 9 children by herself and ran a farm. And that was not appreciated at the time.
No. My grandmother was a feminist in turn of the 20th century Spain. She had a school for young women. She taught them politics and philosophy, and she was not a popular gal in 1910 Spain herself.
Yep.
Her school ultimately closed because parents irately dragged their girls out of it, saying, you're making them unfit for marriage, meaning teaching them to think. But it's okay. She married her philosophy professor, my grandfather, so it all worked out, you know.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah.
Things do out in the end. Yeah, my...
Okay, how long have you been trans? Officially. Obviously all your life, but I mean, when did you transition?
I was aware of what I was at 3 years old, which is, you know, the typical trans narrative, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I transitioned relatively late because, you know, in my generation, most of our lives, we thought we were the only people in the world like us, except for the occasional Christine Jorgensen and Wendy Carlos and people like that.
Well, you're a baby boomer, and so am I.
I am. Yep. Born in 49. And an ex-hippie. And I was an activist back in the 60s, you know. And I've been a feminist since I was like 8 or 9 years old. So, you know, I've been active. I've been fighting the good fight. I lived.
What did your parents
lived...
think of your being trans?
My father died before I tried to come out to my father over and over and over again, and he knew what I was, and he shut me down. My mother was accepting at first, but under the influence of my sister, basically got further and further down the path, and I wound up being estranged from her until her death. You know, sad story, but my generation, you know, those of us that transitioned in the 90s, especially in the mid-90s and early 90s, we used to say, you know, cost is, you know, simple. You lose everything in your life, all your friends, your family, you know, your job.
Well, Melissa Sklars, a friend of ours, has a famous quote. She said, when she transitioned, she lost her education, her social class, her everything, and was shuttled to the back of the line, and that's true.
No, that is absolutely true. You know, in my case, I used to joke that, you know, before transition, I wore jeans and T-shirts and moccasins, and after transition, I wore jeans and T-shirts and flats, and I paid one hell of a price to wear those flats. Yeah.
Well, I transitioned hormonally in 1975 when I was 19, and... You think it was rough in the 90s, girl? Should have been there in the 70s. That was rough.
Oh, honestly, I am so in awe of you doing it back then, okay?
I had no choice. I was so effeminate. Everyone sort of applauded my decision. My family was for it. Everyone was. Everyone said, yeah, good decision. Yeah. You know,
well,
cause...
in my case, I grew a beard because, you know, hippie culture and all that, all right?
Mm-hmm.
And I hid behind the beard. And so I was always myself. but the beard, you know, gave me the reading of male most of the time. And the minute I cut that beard off, I stopped passing as male. It was a shock.
Well, you're very passable, and that is a very good thing for you, you know?
Well, I don't know, it's passable and it's passable. I always maintain that, you know, I went through an awful lot of soul searching for a while, and when I tried, then I didn't pass. And then when
what
I
do you
myself,
mean? I don't understand.
Oh, when I tried to make an effort to be more feminine, then I stopped passing when I did that.
In other words, goodbye jeans and T-shirts, hello pretty pink dresses, that kind of thing.
Yeah, basically, and you know. And then the minute I stopped doing that nonsense, I passed, you know, I get passed, it's a horrible word, but, you know, I was seen as feminine, as female again.
Well, that's the cruelty of our world, the transgender world, that passability equals acceptance. And someone can be Mother Teresa, but if she doesn't pass as female, she is not respected. And we've all seen that many a time, and that is very sad.
Well,
and we
have
to get over that.
I have stories about that and about my introduction to the lesbian community in Central Ohio, because that's where I transitioned, with Central Ohio, which was actually a pretty good place to do it. Probably got less flack than I would have up here in upstate New York.
How did you find a doctor in Ohio?
There was one woman, Morel Crane, who ran the Central Ohio Gender Dysphoria Association. And I did not want, I have a pretty good mind, and I sat down and I added up what that very first estrogen pill was going to cost me. And it came to over $1,500. And I said,
what?
Well, that's just...
Wait. This is in Ohio, and it costs you $1,500?
With the force therapy and all the other hoops they were going to make me jump through, yes. that's how much it would have cost me before I got that first, and it would have been Premarin. Oh, my God, it's how horrible.
Yeah, I remember Premarin, the little purple pill, yeah.
Yeah, Premarin, you know what that is.
Horse urine.
That's exactly what it is, okay? And then they were also passing out Proprem, which was Provera with that. And Provera basically is poison. And it,
well,
and
I took it briefly, and I told my doctor I'm not taking this anymore. That Provera, that blue pill, awful. Now,
yeah.
Today's hormone pills are blue, but they're a turquoise blue, and they're very safe. And
the thing is, if you take Mexican wild yam extract, that is chemically identical to human progesterone. It's not like that, the stuff that they were trying to feed us back then, and people don't know.
Well,
that.
Licorice is natural estrogen, believe it or not.
Well, yeah, yeah, it's a very real licorice is a very potent phytoestrogen, they call it, okay, which is a plant-based estrogen. We can talk about that all night, but we're supposed to be talking about activism.
Well, wait a minute now. So you transitioned, and it cost you all that much money to transition?
No, because I wouldn't do it. I went out.
Well, what
I
did you
my,
do
I,
to transition?
I found my own therapist. Woman who had actually, you know, treated a couple of trans people before, and went through her, and I wouldn't go through the same doctor as the program, and as a result, I was told that I wasn't a real transsexual, and therefore I couldn't have any contact with the real transsexuals in the Central Ohio Gender Dysphoria Association, which was probably the best thing that ever happened to me.
Yeah, group thinking is dangerous. It's much better to be independent. And certainly field of endeavor, being an activist, you do not want to be knitting doilies because the therapist told you to, you know?
Oh, she did what, you know, that woman, you know, she, first of all, she let everybody think she was had a doctorate. She did not. You know,
what's her name again?
Morel Crane. She's probably passed by now. But, yeah, she was a real piece of work. And she ran what I call...
What?
I'm very independent-minded. When I first ran into the Harry Benjamin, you know, standards of
care...
That's
where I went the first time. Yeah, I went to the Harry Benjamin office.
Yeah, but you remember Hubigba, the Harry Benjamin International Gender Dysphoria Association? That's what... That the standard of care, which basically treated, you know, trans women as children,
yes and no. I had a wonderful. He was 93 when I went in 75, August 19th, 1975. Today's the exact anniversary of when I went to Harry Benjamin for the first time.
I'm talking about the organization they named after him.
No, I went to the office, the doctor's office. I had a wonderful doctor named Dr. Leong, because he was no longer practicing. He was well into his 90s. I got my hormones that very day.
Yeah.
And they were quite supportive and kind to me, actually. For a fee, of course. I had to pay them. But still, they were quite nice, you know.
Yeah, the woman I found, you know, she and I bonded immediately, you know. I was very straight with her. I said, look, if I'm going to have to pay for therapy, then I want my money's worth.
Yeah, sure. they wanted to make sure that we weren't insane, you know. You had to have a therapist note in those days, yeah.
And I moderated my opinion somewhat over the years since then. But at the time, I was very offended, and I called it, you know, the Penis Protection League, you know, because God has forbid, you know, that anybody should lose a penis, you know.
Leave it on the bus or anything, yeah.
Yeah, well, but as a feminist, I was like, have you forgotten that over half the world population does not have one and gets along just fine without it?
Exactly. Women are the majority, and
Exactly.
Yet men continue to make rules for women's bodies, which is outrageous.
And back, and even then we were still in the throes of what had gone on in the late 70s and the 80s, which was the girl factory stuff, which was, you know, it was bad enough that if you went to one therapy session wearing jeans instead of a skirt, you know, they could set you back to zero.
Well, I have had that experience. I once walked into Dr. Benjamin's office wearing a burgundy pantsuit that had little flowers all over it. And I was told, pants, really? This is in 1975, November of 1975. It was burgundy velveteen. And I learned my lesson, and from then on, I wore skirts.
Okay. But you see, I came from work. I was a cabinet maker when I first transitioned. And I came directly from dealing with a customer in my boy mode, okay, and to one of my sessions. And I immediately apologized to my therapist for, you know, appearing as such. And she laughed at me. And she said, "That's your male appearance?"
Well, that's good to know.
She said, I just thought you were having a busy day.
That's great. That's great. So, now, you once ran a group home, I believe, for trans folks.
Yeah. Up here in the Matrium of Savelle started out as four of us bought an old Catskill resort in, which is where I still live. And it was, our goal was to provide a place for newly transitioned transsexual women to bootstrap themselves, because so many were winding up homeless, you know, losing everything. And so we pulled our resources to do that. And, you know, three out of four of us that bought the place were already members of the church that I founded, the Matrium of Savelle, Sibylline Revival. And so
which is a goddess and woman-worshipping church.
Yes, basically, it's a revival of the Great Mother Goddess traditions as it was named in Greece and Rome. Hercules would be familiar with some of that, I'm sure. But the fourth person didn't. The three of us lived here. The fourth one lived in Michigan, and she never really had that much interest. And she just wanted to do a sociological experiment, see what happened when you threw a bunch of trans women in the same house. So she sold out her interest. To another woman who was part of our faith. And
no, but I mean, what did happen when many trans women lived together? Was it like a sorority, or was everyone at everyone's throat?
Not everybody at everybody's throat, at least not initially, okay? We did have a rough crowd from the city come up here. But we're not going to, we agreed not to talk about that, those people.
I know the one you mean, yes. We are not mentioning her name.
Yes, I'm not, but, you know, initially I had some funny experiences, you know, like one of them was I had to buy a shop back because the women that were coming here didn't know how to operate a regular vacuum cleaner. it was ridiculous, you know. I ran into a lot of that stereotypical, you know, well, this is women's work and this is men's work. And I was like, yeah, you came here with all kinds of massive skills. You can rebuild, a car engine, you know, in your sleep, or at least you were able to before you transitioned, but you can't even run a vacuum cleaner. You know, what's wrong with this picture, you know?
And they all presumably learned skills
yes,
that they needed.
But like I said, I had, and if I wanted the floors vacuumed, I had to buy a shop back.
What is that? Do you mean like a carpet sweeper?
I mean, no, like a shop vac is like one of those great big barrel things that they use, you know, in the garages and whatnot. You know, those they could understand, but a regular, like Electrolux or whatever, You know,
they couldn't get that. It's easy. You turn it on, you run it back and forth.
Yeah, well, they bring it to me. Oh, it doesn't work anymore. What's wrong? I said, did you check and see if the bag's full? Did you check and see if the hose is clogged? And, you know, it's like...
Oh, there's a bag inside? Oh, who knew?
Yeah, exactly. There's a bag? Really? No. You mean it doesn't just endlessly, you know, pick up dirt?
Absorb
and
the dirt,
transferred
yes.
into the trash? It was fun on the one level, and it was frustrating on another. But it was a learning experience. And basically it was good. And I did learn that I needed to have an equal mix in the religion of non-trans women to trans women. And I refused the word cis. I've always hated that.
We used to call them genetic women, remember?
GGs, yeah. Yep. Yeah. But that even that a lot of women took as insults. Mm-hmm. But basically, I always said that if you set yourself up in an opposition class, then you can't call yourself a woman, not really. Yeah. If you're saying that women, you know, women born women are not the same as you, you're separating yourself, then how can you then say, I'm a woman afterwards?
Those of us who are born male and socialized to be male do have different lived experience from those born female and socialized female.
Absolutely.
So in a sense...
Yeah. No, I totally agree with that, okay? I mean, that's just plain a fact. Part of the problems I see that so many transgender women, and I've always hated that term too. I've always maintained that's a nonsense word. You know, you can trans your sex by, you know, changing your body hormonally and surgically, but you can't trans your gender, which is set before you're born. You know, you're either male, female, or neither.
Well, now they call it gender affirming surgery. So yeah.
But that was always my position. And so I was one of the people back then that fought like crazy against the word transgender.
It beats transsexual because, as you know, people get nervous when they hear the word sex. And these terms are mainly for the straight majority, i.e. the cis majority,
right.
So they can understand us. We understand us, but we're trying to get people out there to understand us, you know.
Yeah, except that there's different things going on. You know, transsexualism is a medical condition. It's a prenatal intersex neurological condition.
Mm-hmm.
And we know this. There were 600 or 700 studies done by the end of the 90s that proved that. Nobody wanted to pay any attention to them, but they were done and they existed, mostly in Europe. And that differed from the group that became transgender, okay? And they didn't like us. I got called a post-op Nazi a lot, you know, as an actor.
Why were you called
to,
that?
Because I kept trying to point out that there were differences. I wrote article after article on that and on the fact that, you know, even within transsexuality, nobody was willing to look at the big picture. For example...
What is the big picture?
Well, that there are several different types of transsexuality, and that, you know, I remember a few, recall the big whoop-de-doo over Blanchard and Bailey and autogynephilia.
Yes. That is where someone becomes a woman because that person is turned on sexually by being a woman, yes.
But it is a real condition. You know,
I know someone like a lawyer, a female lawyer.
Oh, I know several people that fall into that category. So, saying they don't exist doesn't do them any more favors than saying I don't exist, you know.
I know someone like that, and I think that's fine. Look, whatever people are
is
what they are. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
It's not my trip, but it's fine, you know.
But Ann Lawrence was quite famous in activist circles, is a proponent of being an autogynephile. And in fact, you know, we used to joke that her fetish, you know, became a huge public service on the internet, because every time she met a post-op woman, she took pictures of their VJ and added it to her collection online. So we had this fantastic, you know, reference for, you know, who's doing the best surgical work.
Well, there you are. Yeah. So, by the way, who is doing the best surgical work these days? Do you know?
I have no idea. I mean, I thought that the best you could get for quite a while was up in Canada. You know.
Is that where you went?
No, I actually. My story's a little bit different, because it turns out I wasn't transsexual. I was born intersexed.
Oh.
And yes, and oh, geez, I actually just ran across a whole thing when I tried to discuss that online, 20 years ago, and people, went ballistic over it.
Why? I don't see why they would.
Because
if that's
your history. Supposedly, you're saying that you're better than. I never understood that.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Yes, yes, yes. I see.
That somehow I am better because, because I was born with, as something that even in the intersex community, they claim doesn't exist. Sometimes a tetragrammatic chimera. And what that means is that I was twins that combined at the second. The Swift, and that actually happens more often than people realize. But if it's identical twins, then nobody notices. If it's male-male or female-female twins, it only shows up with genetic testing. But if it's a male-female set of twins, then it gets interesting, and that's what happened to me.
So you basically had a female twin inside you, is that it?
I basically had two sets of gonads, and they sewed my labia when I was born. They sewed my labia shut, and because it was something that looked kind of like a penis, they threw a blue blanket over me and called me a male. It was 1949. They didn't know what to do, and it was a tiny hospital in Michigan. My grandmother knew what went on. My mother was like 17 years old when I was born. I don't think she ever knew what went on, my grandmother knew. My grandmother always treated me like her granddaughter.
So did mine, actually, yeah. So did my mother. I'm not a twin or anything and, whatever. But, we are facing a lot of problems right now.
I know four other people that have the same condition I do. And in short, I was able to start dilating and was getting the same kind of depth that other women were getting post-surgically.
That's great. That is wonderful.
Almost immediately.
So you never really needed an operation?
Well, I had an orchiectomy.
Okay, yes, which means removal of the testicles, yes.
Right, exactly. And as soon as they were gone, basically the access to my blind vagina became immediate. And, my anatomy pretty much looks, within the standards of female norm. And having worked as a nursing assistant, I can tell you I've seen hundreds and hundreds of sets of genitals. And mine aren't that remarkable, okay?
May I ask you, can you still have an orgasm after having your testicles removed?
Yeah, because that's a neurological function. That's a subject for a whole other show, if you want to talk about it. I actually... came up with a theory on that and tested it, and then it turned out to be true. It's how you can tell a true transsexual. And I call it nature's little joke. that if you remove all the testosterone from a non-neurologically female individual, then they'll never, you know, they won't have another orgasm. But if you do that to a neurologically female individual, it doesn't have any real effect at all.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah. As you know, we're having a lot of trouble with the fascistic Supreme Court. They're trying to become an American Taliban.
Yeah, yes, they are, and trans women are the basic, you know, target du jour. Which is ironic, because did you know that in the late 50s and early 60s, the Louisiana legislature passed a law making, you know, recognizing the merit of transsexual women?
I think that's wonderful. Good.
And they did
as well. They should.
Yeah, but as far as I know, it's still on the books. Louisiana, for crying out loud, you know.
I know.
But yeah, right now, most of this country is not safe to be trans. Any kind of trans in New York.
It's not safe to be a woman, for God's sake, in this country
point.
Burkas, you know.
Well, they would like to do that. The American Taliban is basically what the evangelists are. I mean, they basically stand for exactly the same things, you know, I look for them to try and disenfranchise women from voting before much longer.
I agree, and I think that we really have to take a stand and forbid. We the people do not consent to be governed by these unelected fascists, and that is the way it is, the Supreme Court.
But how are you going to correct the Supreme Court at this point? It's so out of balance.
Of the justices are not in the first flush of youth and will soon be leaving us, one can but hope.
Yeah, well, we have, you know, two justices that are, you know, corrupt beyond all measure. You know?
Okay, Clarence Thomas, who's the other one, Alito?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
These guys have been taking bribes, open bribes from billionaires since day one. And Thomas's wife, you know, she is a famous right-wing lunatic that was basically, you know, part of the plot to overthrow the government.
She encouraged January 6th. She's
not
a nice
person. How do you fight this? And
well, you can just ignore their rulings, you know.
You can
That's
just ignore their
possible.
Rulings, but you have to be in a place where it's safe to do that.
Living
Florida,
in New York, I think we are safe. And those in California are safe.
Surrounded by MAGA idiots, okay? you would be amazed how many right-wing lunatics running around with Confederate flags there are in my area. It's a little scary. Now, they're not everybody. You know, I wouldn't have a progressive radio station, you know, if it was everybody. But on the other hand, that radio station both keeps me safe on the one hand, but it also paints a target on me at the same time.
Do you
want to
tell us the call numbers of your radio station and how people can access it?
We are WLPPLP in Palinville, New York, low power to the people, at 102.9 on the FM radio dial. And you can hear us in parts of Woodstock, Saugerties, most of Catskill, New York, but you can really hear us on the other side of the river, all the way to Connecticut, because of the vulgarities of where our antenna is located, which is on the side of a mountain. So we actually have a bigger footprint than most low-powered radio stations, you know, get in terms of our number of people we reach.
And what do you discuss on your radio station?
We are a Pacifica Radio Network affiliate.
Oh,
so
wonderful.
I carry shows like Tom Hartman and Arnie Arneson, who was a former governor of New Hampshire, and the Bradcast, which is a really great show. Things like radio, radio censored, and then I carry it. I mix this. It's a very eclectic station. I have 3 hours of classic rock and classic folk music in the mornings, after a couple of hours of talk radio, and then we run Democracy Now.
Wonderful, and, Amy Goodman. Yes.
Oh yeah, and then I mix that up with classical music and Irish music and a little bit of everything.
Sounds like a great station.
Yeah, everybody told me you couldn't do that. You had to pick one genre and stick with it. And I said, no, I don't. Who wrote
good
that rule?
Good for you. Good for you.
I didn't write that rule. So it's a very eclectic radio station, which reflects my eclectic taste. It's a lot of fun on the one hand.
I'm
on the other hand, it's frustrating. It can be frustrating. It's hard to support. Because I don't get a lot of financial support,
Do you ask for donations?
I try not to ask too much for donations. I run Facebook promos and stuff occasionally. Mm-hmm. I try not to. I've always hated that public radio and public TV, endlessly, going after donations.
I know. It's really, yeah. And
it's
used to be, they used to do it only now and then. Now they do it all the time, yeah.
It's constant now. And actually, when you load programs to Pacifica, they specifically require that you have none of that on your program. So, being a member of Pacifica means that we get to load some of our shows up, too, to the Pacifica network, and they wind up getting carried nationally. So,
wonderful.
The main one we have right now is the Red Witch's Green Garden.
is that you? Are you the Red Witch?
Oh, that is my junior priestess who got her doctorate in goddess theology.
Where'd you go to study that anyway?
Well, she went to California to do that.
Okay. Yeah, makes sense. Yeah.
But she studied with some of the, the big name women in paganism. Some of the biggest names like Carol Christ and other names like that. And she very basically, she actually did Carol Christ's eulogy and is considered her heir academically. So
that's great. That is great.
Yeah. That's one of the things I do. I'm trying to encourage trans women to fight back against all this nonsense, because we have to.
So many are afraid. That's the problem.
Well,
and especially those who are stealth and just working ordinary 9-to-5 jobs. They are terrified that their lives will implode and they will be fired and maybe arrested, or that the Supreme Court will forbid transgender medical care for everyone, adult and child.
Well,
and I'll point out,
that's a very real possibility.
I know.
And we need to nip that in the bud.
How?
We need to, for one thing, get together with allies and stop fighting. The left always has had a problem with what we used to call circular firing squads.
Yes, I agree. People of color, women, trans folk, LGBTQ folk in general, we all need to coalesce, because there's safety and strength in numbers. And so many people don't get that, and they just
don't want to. None of us are going to survive unless we band together.
I agree.
Or who was it? I think Thomas Paine said, Benjamin Franklin. We have to hang together, or we will certainly hang separately.
How true is that? And we really do. And as I've said, Well, I tell younger trans folk not to worry too much because I'm old enough to remember when the transgender world was pretty much underground, and yet we survived. So there you are.
We did
survive. It's not something I want to go back to, but if we have to, we can. We've always existed. We will always exist. And the Supreme Court and other fascists just have to realize that. There is no, it's like saying I'm doing away with air. No, you can't do away with air, and you can't do away with trans folk, and that's the way it is.
Well, you know, there wouldn't even be an internet without trans women.
Well, tell me about that.
Okay. The transistor, one of the inventors of the transistor was a woman named Lynn Conway. When she was getting ready to transition in the 60s, IBM fired her for it. Okay, she went on to be the primary developer of the silicon chips that run everything in our world today.
Yes.
It was mostly her invention. And she went on and did that, you know, for another company as herself. You know, and 25 years later, IBM actually apologized to her and gave her the Lifetime Achievement Award.
I think
she's
so,
still
at the beginning... Yes, I know. And at the beginning, when she transitioned, she had to work as an assistant to men who didn't know one-tenth of what she knew.
Yes, but she now is credited with everything she did. And then there was another woman, Sophie. Wilson, I think it is, who basically put together the first practical small computers in Great Britain. And wound up with, there was over a million of her computers wound up in the schools in Great Britain, and she was highly involved in that. And then a woman that I knew personally, Mary Ann Horton, she was instrumental in developing the code that made almost everything work for email and all that type of training. She wrote all the protocols for that, and she's still around too. And still influential. The Sophie stuff is still used today in almost every smartphone in the world. Arguably, the internet wouldn't exist. And then DARPA, the DARPANET, okay, which was the military internet that became the internet. The very first social use of that platform was transsexual women making contact with each other because they were able to do it anonymously.
That's wonderful. That is. Why are we so unsung? Why is it that trans women's achievements are ignored and attributed to straight cisgender men, as a rule, when so many of us are outright geniuses?
Well, see, that's the interesting thing, is that and transsexual women, and studies confirmed this in the 90s as well, average at least 2 standard deviations above the norm in intelligence and creativity. And it got noted, and the government took note of this, by the way, and they used to watch us. They spied on all of our social groups that we, you know, where we got together. The further you went up in Mensa, the higher the percentage of transsexual women.
When I was 17 years old, my father's business partner, Yale Hirsch, asked me to join Mensa. I was profoundly offended. I thought I was way too cool and hip and hippie-ish and groovy to be a member of Mensa. Oh, I was so offended. It bothered me forever. I thought, I seem a nerd? I was horrified, really, and I did not join.
I didn't join either because when invited, because I didn't want to be the dumb one. That's what I used to tell people.
excuse me, boy, those cigarettes are going to get me one of these days. But anyway,
the
I still smoke cigarettes.
I've had to rub elbows with some of the most intelligent people on the planet over the years, you know. And,
yes.
Coming of age in India, I had lunch with Indira Gandhi.
How thrilling is that?
Before she was a big deal. And I knew Joseph Heller, who wrote Catch-22.
Yeah, yes, yes.
Knew General Tibbetts, who flew the plane that dropped the bomb on Hiroshima.
Well, now, your father was quite well-placed in India. What did he do again?
He was the principal of the American International School in New Delhi.
Mm-hmm.
That's how I wound up going 2 years of high school to that school. And when they said it was an international school, it was an international school. I went to kids from Poland, from Czechoslovakia, from Peru, from India, from, you know, all over Asia. You name it. Okay? It was a true international school, and it was a freaking awesome experience. Yeah.
Do you think that accounts for your broad outlook on life, that you're not parochial in your outlook, that you see all the many shadings of human experience in ways that someone who grew up, say, in a small town going to the one-room schoolhouse would not see?
Well, it helped that, you know, I come my mother's side of the family is what I call swamp Yankees, who never paid any attention to, you know, conventions. In fact, the joke, my mother was the middle, one of the middle children, and the joke was that I was the first eldest child conceived in legitimacy.
Well, that's a good one. Okay.
Oh yeah, yeah. Because like, you know, my cousin Hopi, you know, she'd been around for a year and a half when my cousins Gardner and Biddy Bee, who were twins, my aunt and uncle got married just before they were born.
That is great. I think that is great. Good for them. Good that they waited. And
that was,
good. It's just
that
a piece of paper.
That was part of the family, okay? So I grew up with that, and then I go over there, and I, you know, I had the stupid America is freaking awesome mentality when I first got to India, but boy, I lost that in a big hurry.
Yeah, I lived for 2 years in Spain when I was a teenager, and I they really hated us. I mean, they hated us in Spain. When they thought I was English, they liked me. When they found out, no, I'm American, they wanted me dead, you know. I mean, excuse me. Like, I mean, shopkeepers and everything, you know.
Yeah. Oh yeah, I know, because I wandered to the bazaars of old Delhi, where, you know, three Marines wouldn't go. You had to have at least four Marines to go in there, okay? And I wandered it like it was my home. And the reason I was able to do that was they thought I was Russian.
There you go. There you go.
Everybody,
and
you know.
But now, to get back to our struggle here, we're almost out of time. Is there anything we can do now to forestall the making illegal of transgender medical care? Because that's on everyone's mind, and everyone is very nervous about that.
I know, and right now there's actually an exodus leaving some of the southern states, which is what really needs to happen, is that, you know, it's mostly the trans youth that are, and their parents that are thinking about leaving.
If they can afford, if you are a blue-collar couple or a single person, a blue-collar single person who works in a factory or a farm or something, just
it's
a worker,
hard.
Not an owner, how in God's name are you supposed to afford to move to New York or California or Chicago so your child can receive the transgender care they need? I mean, that is, it's so evil and unfair that these states are destroying lives, causing suicides, and they think they're on the side of the angels.
They're not on the side of the angels, but, you know, the whole treating of trans youth is fairly recent.
It's crazy.
I mean, I was involved in the very first trans youth case, which was the Aurora Lipscomb case, which made international news at the time, okay, because she was taken from her mom at age 4 by social services, and then we had to fight like a dog to get her back. And that became one of the very first trans youth cases.
How cruel people are. And they think these people are as bad as the judges who hanged your ancestor. Yes, and
they
will
are.
Go down in history as being that prejudiced and bigoted as those Salem judges.
But unfortunately, they're doing it in education. They're doing it to everybody, okay?
Mm-hmm.
They're taking away, voting from any minority groups. I mean, black people.
Yeah, I almost died from shock when they repealed the voting rights bill. I couldn't believe it.
Well, yeah, but that's what's – look for it. Right now, the agenda is to turn back the entire 20th century, basically turn it back, all the way back to the robber barons.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Well, they're doing a nice job. I heard the other day on the radio that 50% of people who were middle class 10 years ago are now living below the poverty level.
I was going to say, there is no middle class anymore. I grew up in middle class America.
So did I, yeah.
It doesn't exist any longer. But, let's be practical. I when I grew up, and granted, if you were, Hispanic or black or anything other than white, okay, this didn't apply. But if you were your standard, white factory worker, you could buy a house, buy a new car every couple of years, take your family on vacation.
Sure, absolutely.
One salary, and you could live a really, really nice, comfortable middle-class life on one blue-collar salary. And they destroyed that. They utterly
destroyed that. Even with two salaries now, people can barely survive, yeah.
Yeah, exactly, and sometimes three, because a lot of people are having to work several jobs. So,
their kids have to live with them when they're like 30 years old, and they bring in as much cash as they can, but they go to school, they spend a fortune on a college education, they're up to their eyeballs in debt for life because of the college loans. They can only get jobs like selling at Home Depot or something, even though they might be PhDs. It's an absolute disgrace what's going on in this country.
And when I went to school, I was able to work my way through the university with summer jobs and part-time jobs.
I know a man who worked his way through Princeton with summer jobs. How do you like that? In the early 60s. Yeah.
Yeah, well, this was the late 60s, I went to Ohio State, and I had to pay out-of-state tuition fees because, my family was living in Huntington, West Virginia, which is another story altogether. That's where we wound up after India. My father took a job as the head of the Job Corps in Huntington, West Virginia.
That's great. You're such an evolved family, so progressive,
Well, I grew up with that, okay?
I did, too. I was lucky enough to... Now, Hercules, how much time do we have?
We have around 7 minutes.
Okay.
Now, before I give your contact information and everything, I would just like people to know that Kathy Platine is so interesting. I hope, Kathy, will you do next month's show, too?
Sure. You can look forward to
Kathy being a recurring guest on this show. And she is brilliant and fascinating and unique and does a huge amount of good for the transgender community. And you can look forward to hearing her again and certainly next month. And, now can you give us your contact information?
Anybody can email me at Catherine or Kathy, either one, with a C.
I thought it was with a K. Okay, with a C.
Nope, I'm a C, Kathy. And my full name as the Welsh spelling, so it always confuses people. It's C-A-T-H-R-Y-N, Catherine. And so you can reach me by email at either Kathy with a C, C-A-T-H-Y, or Catherine, either one will get to me, at Gallia.com, GALLAE.com, because I have owned my own domain for 25 freaking years.
Good for you. So, and you'll be glad to answer questions from people and discuss trans issues, I hope.
I will be more than happy to discuss trans issues, pagan issues. You know, I'm a chatterbox, okay? And if anybody is 10 miles north of Woodstock and they want to drop by, drop me a line. I'd love to see you, as long as you haven't got COVID.
or a gun. But anyway, careful with inviting people to see you, you know.
Yeah, I know, but, you know.
Well, Kathy might have a gun herself, so watch it. Don't mess with Kathy.
Well, I have muzzle loaders.
There you go. So if you go see Kathy, be real nice to her. That's all I can say.
I have muzzle loaders. I have crossbows. I have a wall full of, longbows.
Kathy likes to be treated well, folks. I'm telling you now. But anyway, you're a great guest, and you are an historical figure, and it's time you claimed your place in history. You know it is, and you will, and you are doing that as we speak. And I think you're the greatest thing going, the greatest person going. I think you're fabulous, and I'm so glad we know each other, and I hope we know each other forever. And I'm gushing, I'm fanning out, I'm geeking out, as they say. But you're great.
Okay, well, I'm not all that in a box of chips. I'm just a crazy old lady, you know.
It's the crazy old ladies who changed the world, honey.
Well, I basically used to tell people that when I was young, I wanted to be the crazy old lady who lived in the big house with all the cats, and you should be careful what you wish for.
Hello, yes. I used to wish I'd be recognized in the streets, and I'm on television now almost 34 years. When I get recognized in the street, I'm horrified. I think, oh, my God, is this person going to kill me? What's going on here? I don't know what's going on.
It's relatively safe for you there, but not, you know, a lot safer than it was 10, 20 years ago.
No, actually, it was much safer then.
Was
New York
really?
Is very dangerous now. Ever since COVID, people have gone crazy, and it's very dangerous now.
Oh,
COVID drove a lot of people loco, really, truly, believe it or not.
Yeah, I do believe it. I do believe it. I've become basically a hermit since COVID.
Clever idea. So anyway, I think we're out of time. But anyway, you can hear Kathy on next month's show, third Saturday of the month, from 9 to 10 Eastern time. We will be discussing more things trans, more things pagan, more things everything that you might be interested in. I'm Diana Montford. My guest has been the brilliant transgender activist, feminist, and pagan leader, Miss Kathy Platine. I love you. Hey, even if nobody else loves you, I love you, people. So take good care of yourselves, and just remember, coalesce. There's strength in unity. We must unite. Love you a lot. Talk to you next time. Bye.
And thank you, Diana. Thank you, Kathy, for a wonderful show. I'm looking forward to part two and the continued adventures. And thanks to my wonderful audience for tuning in. Whether you clicked on a link and found yourself here, whether you dialed and you're patiently waiting in our queue, or whether you're going to check us out later on demand. Until next time, this is us wishing you joyous journeys and amazing adventures. Thanks again, Diana.